You're listening to the Office Anywhere podcast, a show that inspires listeners to live on purpose and create meaningful change for themselves and those they care about. My name's Peter Fritz, and I'm a writer, designer, parent, and outdoor adventure lover, best known for my ideas around remote work, family, side projects, and personal reinvention. I share stories and strategies that help you find your footing, encourage you to grow, and create a life you can be proud of. Sometimes I have guests on the show, and other times, well, it's just you and me. To check out previous episodes, go to officeanywhere.co/podcast. The daily commute is no more. In its place, we have a delightful vacuum of available hours to indulge long-suppressed curiosities, desires, and human needs. This pandemic that's torn across our planet has done incalculable damage, there's no doubt about that, and it still has a long way to go. But it's also produced something no one really seemed to have before, free time. But with free time comes uncertainty. Most of us aren't used to having empty blocks in our schedule. And although we lament our busy, busy days, there's also some measure of comfort in knowing, well, what to do next. So how should you use this time? Can you use it to make some extra money on the side? My answers are boldly and hell yes. Like many countries around the world, Australia's been subject to rolling lockdowns, meaning trips to restaurants, weekend escapes, and visiting friends are all off the agenda, basically all the stuff that I like to do before. And Melbourne is famous for its cafes and restaurants, but right now, the CBD looks like a zombie movie. The streets are dead, save for bits of trash swirling in the wind and a few lost souls with nowhere to bunk down for the night. Just a couple of weeks ago, I drove to the city to get some supplies, and I swear to God, the freeway ahead of me and behind me were completely empty. There wasn't a single car as far as I could see ahead of me or behind me. It was unnerving. And I honestly felt like I was the last survivor in a post-apocalyptic world. But this new reality, strange and unfamiliar as it is, also presents an incredible opportunity for anyone with a bit of ambition and the willingness to have a crack at creating something. Since I was a kid, I've always had something going on the side, from handcrafts that I originally sold to my neighbours when I was about 8-9 years old, later on to freelance writing and web design gigs, right through to app development for multi-billion dollar companies. Maybe it's in my DNA, but I've never been satisfied doing just the one thing. I think people like me are called multi-potentialites, or maybe I'm just easily bored. Recently, though, millions of us have glimpsed a window into a world of fresh possibilities. The massive surge in remote work combined with easy internet access, cheap software tools, and a global audience has made this a new and exciting period to be alive. It's an unprecedented convergence of circumstances. For the first time in history, people in developed nations have both the catalyst and the means to create something of their own without betting the farm or giving up what they already have. Call it a side hustle, call it solopreneurship or freelancing, regardless of how you define it, it's here and it's available to just about everyone. So, questions are, how do you make extra money without getting a second job? Number two, what can you offer and how do you get it out there? Three, how do you begin with just a few hours a day? And four, how do you start building something on the side without risking your job? So let's talk about making the extra money. A few weeks ago, I read a fabulous book by Matthew Kimberley called Get an Effing Grip. It was brilliant and I read every day. It's definitely one of the top five books I've read. I was so enthralled, in fact, that I immediately bought another four of them, one for my girls and three to give away on my podcast interview with Matthew, which is coming up very soon. In the book, Matthew delivers the kick up the ass that many of us sorely need, and he does it in a way that's really digestible, it's actionable, and it's genuinely funny. It's hilarious. Read it, and I promise you'll find yourself nodding throughout, mumbling stuff like, shit, that is so simple. I certainly did it most of the way through the book. So in the spirit of that very fine tome, I will tell you that the keys to making money on the side are also very simple. And here they are. Number one is to offer something that people actually want and then bundle it with what they need. Now, I've been guilty of making this mistake many times. I still make this mistake often, is I think that I should offer what people need. And the truth is, not many of us buy what we need if we don't perceive it as being absolutely essential. We will gladly justify buying things that we want and rationalize it with a perceived need. So as tempting as it is to try and sell people what they need, sell people what they actually want, and then bundle it with what they actually need. Number two is to over-deliver on your promises and to never promise what you can't deliver. This is really, really important. It can take many years to build up a reputation, and you can pretty much destroy it in a matter of minutes. Number three is to charge a fair price. And this one comes with an unusual caveat in that a fair price is often more than what you think it is. We often undervalue ourselves, especially if we have a skill, because if it's a skill that we've acquired over a long period of time, we assume that it's nothing particularly special a lot of the time. And yet to others who are ignorant in the ways of the skill we've developed, they might think we're extraordinary. So, you know, it's a bit like the boiled frog syndrome, that we don't really understand the depth of understanding we have on a topic or at a particular area of expertise if we've acquired it over a long period of time. So often a fair price is more than what you think. And the last one is to ask for referrals until you don't need them anymore. So that's four, is offer something that people want, bundle it with what they need. Number two, over-deliver on your promises and never promise what you can't deliver. Three is to charge a fair price, which often is more than what you might think. And four is to ask for referrals until you don't need them anymore. Of all the sales and marketing tactics I've studied, and marketing is my thing, nothing beats this collection of principles. And believe me, I've tried. So now we get to the question of two questions. What can you sell and how can you sell it? So for the second part, how can you sell it? I would defer to Corbett Barr and the fine folks over at fizzle.co. They have a fantastic roadmap in their online course library that teaches you about the range of business archetypes available to anyone who's trying to start something on the side. So let's run through these archetypes. The first and most obvious is a freelancer. Now, this is somebody who is a writer, a photographer, a marketer, a graphic designer, a consultant of some sort. And this is something I've done for most of my life, is originally charging per hour, but certainly for many years now, charging per project to deliver something that requires the skills that I have to deliver it. The second is a teacher. This is somebody who will present structured learning on specific areas of expertise. And they will use, typically these days, especially at the moment, an online platform like Udemy or Teachable or Kajabi or LearnDash to deliver that content. The third is a curator, and this is certainly popular amongst the younger set, is to share interesting and topical information that's actually created by others. And typically they'll do that through social, either through the social media channels or through YouTube, but it could also be through a blog or a podcast or something else like that. My son, for example, loves to watch videos by a particular creator who simply gathers up funny material from the last week on the internet and puts it together in a video. And some of those have got 70 million views, which is just astonishing. It just boggles the mind. So far we've got freelancer, teacher, curator, and next one is leading learner. This is somebody who, especially if you feel that you have a little bit of imposter syndrome, which a lot of us do at different times, where you think, I'm not much of an expert on anything. What can I possibly, you know, share or teach or offer that's of value? Well, you might be a leading learner. This is somebody who is sharing the journey as they learn something themselves, replete with all the stumbles and insights, missteps, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of people like to listen to, read, follow somebody who is in this space, because oftentimes somebody who is learning as they go is far more relatable than somebody who is, you know, a guru from up on high, waxing lyrical about principles that they've learned since they were born. So that might be something for you. The next one is a maker. And I fell into this category when I was very young. I loved making stuff in the back shed. And this is somebody who manufactures or produces tangible goods of some kind. And common platforms for these to sell on include Etsy, eBay, and e-commerce platforms like Shopify, WooCommerce, via your own website, that sort of stuff. The next one is an online retailer or a traditional retailer, but I wouldn't want to be a traditional retailer these days without a very strong online presence. And my wife's ringing me. Let's pause this, shall we? So, where did we get up to before my wife interrupted us? I think it was retailing. So, retailing. Now, this could be offline or online. But I wouldn't want to start an offline retailing business these days unless I had a very strong online presence and a long-term online strategy as well. But this will be selling other people's goods usually. And if you're going to be doing that online, then the big platforms, of course, are eBay and Amazon. If you have your own website, say if it's a WordPress site, then you'll probably use something like WooCommerce, but there are other options out there. And Shopify is also extremely popular, and I've used both. And Shopify is very elegant, very simple to deploy, very easy to maintain and manage. So I'm a big advocate of Shopify. WooCommerce is better if you've got something particularly complex and bespoke that you want to do, but it does come at a maintenance cost because it is quite a bit more complex and there are a lot of moving parts. The next archetype I want to talk about is a mediapreneur. And really, if you're doing most of any of the other archetypes, then mediapreneur is going to figure in there somehow, because this is somebody who is creating content, digital content typically, and that'll be a blogger or a video maker or a podcaster. So if you're selling stuff, if you're teaching stuff, if you're learning stuff, if you're making stuff, then typically you're also going to be producing content of some kind to deliver value to people before they choose to buy from you, and also to promote what you're doing. So you're going to be a mediapreneur of some kind. And the last one is a thought leader. Now, this is somebody who shares ideas and concepts through publishing and through public speaking. So we're talking things like books and webinars and a blog and YouTube, online courses, all that sort of stuff. So as you'd imagine, there's a fair bit of crossover here between the different archetypes, and typically you'll have a bit of a mix of those. I mean, for me, for example, I do a lot of freelance work. I've done a little bit of teaching with an online course, and I have another one that's coming out soon. I don't tend to curate other people's content very much. I haven't done much of the leading learning stuff. I used to make stuff when I was younger, and I loved that. My wife does retailing. I don't do any of that. I do a bit of mediapreneur stuff, obviously, because I have this podcast and I'm aiming to create more videos, better quality videos over time. And I wouldn't class myself as a thought leader yet, but I do have a lot of experience in the topics that I talk about, like remote work and parenting and, investing money and making money on the side. So I guess maybe I could be considered by some who are a little ignorant that I'm a bit of a thought leader in some of those areas. Okay, so now we've talked about the different archetypes. Let's talk about what you can actually sell. So we've talked about how you might sell it in terms of the channels that you might use to sell stuff, but what are you actually going to sell? So I think it tends to fall at the intersection of three key questions. So these three questions are, one of them is pretty predictable, is what are you passionate about or excited about? But I'm going to qualify this in a sec. Now, when I was younger, my passions were photography and dirt bikes. I love those things. It's all I could think about was photography and dirt bikes, and preferably doing the two at the same time, photographing dirt bikes. So as a result of that, by the age of 16, I had my first article with photos appear in my favorite dirt bike magazine. So my fourth article that I did for that magazine caught the eye of an art director, which led to the launch of my career in print media. And it set off an exciting series of events that you could not buy with money. I'm talking about things like driving my first Lamborghini when I was 18 years old with P plates on the car. I mean, it was just too exciting for words. Being ferried about in private jets, spending days and days on racetracks around the country, staying in presidential suites, hanging out of helicopters 3 feet off the deck in outback Australia. So many exciting things I got to do. It was just incredible. Then later, it was the internet and web design that really enthralled me, leading to the first of many paid gigs in web design back in 1996. So that was the very beginning for me, was 96, in terms of web design and stuff like that in the internet. Today, it's everything around intentional living, creating projects that I care about, making memories with people I love, forging my own little dent in the universe. That's what's really important to me. And my first blog, Midlife Tribe, was the start of all of that. And then Office Anywhere continued that work. And soon a new project is going to bring it all into one place. And if you subscribe already to my blog, then you'll have received an email from me about that. Okay, so that's the first question, is what are you passionate or excited about? And we'll get to the qualification on this in a few minutes. The second one is, what skills or talents or perspectives do you have? Now, the first two of those, skills and talents, don't need to be especially unique. because the last one will make them unique enough to stand out, providing you share openly and authentically. This is important. I believe that the time for injecting humanness into business has well and truly arrived. And so those who imbue their work with their unique voice and their style will command a loyal following because it plays to the human propensity to choose those who are like us. It's just what we all do. And it simultaneously deflects those who aren't, which is perfect. It's very efficient. So are they around, you know, these topics? Are they around the things that you do for a living now, for example? Do you have experience or training in a certain discipline that's been sitting dormant for years? I mean, my skills, for example, are around taking complex problems and devising affordable solutions to them. It's around visual design and the written word, although I've still got a long way to go on those. But the fact is, though, my skills and talents are sufficient to charge a good price for them. And it'll be the same for you too. These days, I'm focused on improving my skills as an interviewer for my podcast. That's really important to me. And as a video maker to augment my written work. And this is what you're watching now is the very beginning of the beginning of that. I know this is nothing particularly flash, but I'm just starting out and I'm finding my feet. And over time, as I devote more time to it, I'll get better at it. Okay, so the third question is, where do you have a bit of leverage or existing influence and credibility? So do you have contacts in your industry, for example, some past accomplishments, personal or professional, that you can highlight? Or are you neck deep in tackling something that you can share with authority at the moment? Perhaps you've been writing a blog for a year. Can you fashion that content that you've created into a book or into a podcast or a series of YouTube videos, for example? Could you create a course on past works? Have you done some work for or some favors for people that you can, that where those people can amplify your message through their own contacts or through their audience? Can you talk about your area of expertise or interest on somebody else's podcast, for example? If you approach what you're doing with a genuine desire to actually serve people, and serving people might just be entertaining them. It doesn't have to be something life-changing. But if you have a genuine desire to serve people in some capacity, well, then you're going to find endless channels through which to share your message. The technicalities of getting the message out is nowhere near as important as having something genuine to offer. Okay, so, you know, the real question here, of course, is where is your intersection? Because this is the trick. Which of your passions, interests, skills, talents, perspectives, and points of leverage can you combine into something to either talk about or teach or curate content for? What could you design or make or sell or promote or produce content for? Secondly, is there a demand out there in the world, even a small niche, that would benefit from what you have to share around this topic? Google it and find out. If there are other people doing it and succeeding with it, then that's actually a really good sign. It means there's demand for products or services around your chosen topic. Don't take the absence of competition in the area that you want to go into as a golden opportunity to get in there and dominate. You're not Steve Jobs. You're not going to invent the next iPhone. So you actually want competition. And it's not competition anyway because there's nobody like you. But you want people producing content or product around your area of interest. I mean, there's a reason why fast food restaurants congregate in common areas. It's because it helps each of them, because people go where they have choice and they rather drive to a particular corner that has four or five restaurants than, you know, go somewhere where there's only one, where they only have one choice. Okay, now let's get to this issue of passion that I mentioned before, that there was a bit of a qualifier here. You don't have to do something that you're passionate about in order to succeed. You really don't. But the thing is, unless it interests you directly, and by directly I mean doing the thing is of interest to you, or it interests you indirectly, meaning that you like the outcomes of doing the thing, then it's going to be hard to keep at it long enough to succeed in any measure. You don't have to follow your passion, but it makes the journey more enjoyable and easier to sustain when you're bashing away at a keyboard while the family sleeps or your friends are throwing prawns on the barbie. You know, you kind of need some kind of strong interest or passion, or at least a pleasure element, a pleasure component of doing the thing or the outcome of the thing to keep it up, or else you're just not going to keep it up. Passion itself is, I think, a lot like inspiration. It's highly overrated because typically passion comes from mastering something difficult or something important or something you care about. It comes from mastery. That's how passion develops. And inspiration is the byproduct of toil. It's not the byproduct of navel gazing. I mean, on the odd occasion, yes, you might feel inspired. I typically feel inspired sitting in an aircraft seat 40,000 feet up or in a beautiful hotel room looking out over a gorgeous view from an elevated position. I always tend to feel inspired, but, you know, like having a shower, it doesn't last. So if something interests you enough to learn what's required to convert it into something saleable, then absolutely go for it. You can iterate and refine and even pivot completely as you go if you need to, and you probably will at some point. You're far more likely to find your muse in the pursuit than you are in your daydreams. Remember that. Okay, so let's talk a bit more about what can you sell. By far the easiest thing to sell is a skill or a talent that you already have. I sell my marketing, copywriting, and design skills because they're the things I'm reasonably good at. You might be good at teaching or entertaining, making videos, or crafting stuff in the back shed. Luckily for us, the world is our audience these days, and with the right tools, you can sell what you offer to just about any country on this little blue ball of ours. You really can. And don't worry about being a certified expert, unless you're a proctologist, of course, or anything with ologist in its name. Chances are you're expert enough at something, or more likely a combination of some things. Create as you learn, I think, is the key here. It's the only way you'll really understand what you're doing and which areas to focus on. And the stuff that you suck at can usually be outsourced to others for peanuts. Upwork Freelancer, there's a bunch of places where you can go to get stuff done for you that you're either not very good at or really you'd be better off investing your time elsewhere because it's grunt work. There are tons of other resources that I could recommend for learning about, you know, what to sell and creating something on the side. Chris Guillebeau's Side Hustle School and Pat Flynn's Smart Passive Income are both fantastic. I've known them both for years and I can vouch for their integrity and their genuine desire to help you along your journey. Also, and this is really important too, is learn only what you need at any given point while you experiment. Become a proponent of just-in-time learning rather than overwhelming yourself with a whole bunch of just-in-case learning. Just-in-case learning is, it's exhausting and it's stressful and it just creates anxiety because you think, oh, I really should learn this and maybe I should learn that. And if I just learned that, maybe that'll help. No, that's fishing. What you need to do is focus on the job that you have in front of you. And when you come across an obstacle or something where you'd be better served by knowing how to do it well, then seek advice on how to do that specific thing. Don't go learning a whole bunch of other things, just in case you might need it later on, because there's only so much that the brain can absorb at any one time. And if you're filling your head with a bunch of stuff that's just in case stuff, you're going to wear yourself out, so don't do it. Okay, let's talk about the money and where the money comes from, because this is kind of important. So if you're selling tangible or intangible products, then obviously that's where your money's going to come from with those. It's either going to be your products or somebody else's on your own website or one of the sales platforms. It could come through publishing, either producing and selling your own books or guides, which will usually be in PDF or Kindle format, although now you can also publish your own hard copy, soft cover, print cover books, printed books as well, and I've done that in the past myself. It could come through advertising revenue, where you share in the fees paid by advertisers to appear alongside your content, and we're talking things like Google AdSense, ClickBank, that sort of stuff. But seriously, unless you have a lot of web traffic, then the income from this is paltry. So usually better off choosing another revenue channel. And personally, I'm not a fan of having ads on my content. I don't particularly like seeing ads on the content that I consume. So a long time ago, I decided I just wouldn't have ads. I mean, if it was, I don't know, even if it was really, really lucrative, I think I'd still have my doubts. Or if I did, it would have to be stuff where I can nominate the advertisers and not just let random stuff pop up. But anyway, as it stands, you need a ton of traffic in order to warrant putting ads on your content anyway. And it's the same with YouTube. I mean, a lot of people think that's where you make money on YouTube is through having millions of views and then you start to share in the ad revenue. And yes, you can earn money that way. My daughter, Sarah, she earned a few months there where some of her videos went viral and she had literally millions of views on her videos. She earned some good money out of the ad revenue share on YouTube, but it quickly died. It fizzled because, well, eventually the views fizzled because they went popular and then they fizzled off. And so did the ad revenue. There's far better ways to make money out of YouTube than out of sharing the ad revenue. You're better off to send the traffic from there through the description to a place where you control what you sell, whether that's something digital or it's something tangible. You're better off using YouTube to actually channel traffic to a place that you control where you can make money selling your own things. Okay, so that's advertising. Affiliate revenue is another one, and this can be quite good. This is where you recommend versus directly selling other people's products, and you earn a small commission if they purchase through your link. Think things like Amazon affiliates. And again, back to Pat Flynn's Smart Passive Income, he has a brilliant course on affiliate marketing, so look that up. Another one is training, either online, video, email, downloadable content, or offline, which of course is not very easy right now. Another one is sponsorship, where brands pay you a fee to align with or appear in your content. And some of the top podcasts and YouTube channels earn revenue this way. In fact, YouTube is a good example of where once you have a sizable following, if you don't want to sell stuff yourself, if you don't have anything specific to offer yourself, well, then sponsorship is probably a much more lucrative way to generate ongoing revenue on your YouTube channel than sharing the ad revenue. And the last one is, of course, consulting and freelancing. As I mentioned, this is where you deliver a specialized service for a fee and is definitely the easiest for most people starting out, is to sell a particular skill that you have. Now, amongst all of these options lives an ideal fit for you, perhaps a combination of two or three. I certainly don't just stick with the one. I work with a few of them. And I mentioned my daughter before, and you know, when she had a video, I thought it was called, 13-year-old cake face. It was about young teenagers wearing makeup. And the thing just blew up, that video, went nuts. And for a period there, she really earned Gucci levels of revenue from those ads. But like I said, it soon faded. And now she makes a very solid income actually doing makeup for other people, models, shoots, weddings, whatever. And she also teaches her incredible skills. She's an incredible makeup artist. She teaches those through live webinars. She's a very smart cookie, my Sarah, and she still has the Gucci pumps too. Okay, so let's get on to the last couple of parts of this. Not getting fired by your boss. This is kind of important. Or your family, by the way. Like a lot of people, I'm excited by new beginnings. And in my early days of entrepreneurship, I allowed my endeavors to consume huge amounts of time. Every couple of years, it seems, I had a new project in the works, and it was common to find me basking in the glow of a computer screen at 4 a.m. And that was after starting my day 21 hours earlier. Back then, I remember I figured that sleep was for the lazy, and I was on the superhighway to stupendous wealth, so sleep, health, and cognitive function be damned. Being excited and ambitious is definitely powerful, and it can be a great ally, but it can also ruin your life if you're not careful. You can find yourself Googling solutions to your burgeoning empire's insatiable needs when you should be doing your regular job, especially now that you're at home and less supervised than what you otherwise would have been. And if you do this long enough, not only will your family disown you, but your boss will too. So the trick is to schedule your activities. You have to compartmentalize your days into things that matter. At the simplest level, that might include your job, your family, exercise and rest, and your side project, whatever that happens to be. You need to decide how much each of them gets per day, and you need to bloody stick to it. It's not about balance. Life is rarely an exercise in that. It's about being 100% present and effective in the areas for the time that you've allotted to each of them. For many of you, your most productive and enlightened hours for your creative side projects is going to be in the early hours of the morning. And there's a reason why most uber successful people are early risers. The fact is, you know, the house is quiet, your brain is fresh. This is the most important thing. Your brain is fresh because it's had a rest, and you're tackling your stuff, your side project, when everyone's asleep. It makes you feel like you're in control of your life. You're the early bird who genuinely deserves the worm, because when everybody else is rolling over and hitting the snooze button, you're up and at it, building your future, creating something that's important to you. So I think it is genuinely worth developing the habit of rising early to pursue whatever it is that you want to do on the side. So the last bit of advice I would give you is to act like your boss is always watching. As I've said before, I like to pretend that my home office has a secret camera over my shoulder and that my boss is on the other end of that feed eating vintage cheese and watching my every move. It mightn't be a healthy attitude to it, but it really makes sure that when I'm on the clock, I stay on my game. You never want to bite the hand that feeds you. Like I said to you before, it can take years to build up a good reputation and you can destroy it overnight. Something else you have to do with your employer is communicate often. You know, keep your boss and your colleagues up to date with your work and share your progress, you know, as often as is necessary. You know, you need to recognize that your boss quietly suspects, especially now that you're working from home, that you're curled up in front of the telly eating Tim Tams. So surprise and delight her by proving otherwise and keep the Tim Tams on your desk if you have to. Plenty of employees are nervous about staff working from home. So as you can imagine, right now their anxiety is at peak levels, a lot of them. Your objective is to show them that you're not just effective at home, but more effective than you would be if you were cooped up in your cubicle. And another thing, don't telegraph your side hustle successes until you have enough money from that to wave your job goodbye. It sends the wrong signal. It basically says, I don't need you. And it raises unnecessary suspicion. So if you're sticking to your allotted time for your side project and you remain an effective employee, there's no reason to seek accolades from your boss for your entrepreneurial activities. You should get enough pats on the back from the job that you're doing, from the job they're paying you to do, if you're doing it well. I remember years ago, a friend of mine built a sizable business on the side, and it allowed him, after a while, to actually save all the money that he was getting from his job. And he did that for quite a long time. So when it was time to say bye, Felicia, and kick the job goodbye, he had a nice fat financial buffer there to help him navigate the next chapter of his life without any stress. So the bottom line is, you know, be an exceptional employee and bank the earnings from your side project for as long as you can, along with the earnings from your job. And, you know, your boss will thank you in the end, and so will your balance sheet. I have jumped out of well-paying jobs a couple of times too early. I was too cocky, I was too confident, and I was projecting too much into the future how good things were going to be, and I don't recommend it. Keep the job for as long as you can, unless it is simply untenable or impossible to do your side project justice. But I think that's going to, for most of you, that's going to be very rare that that's the case. I think in most cases, it's overconfidence and it's impatience that leads people to leave their job too early. And don't forget your family. You know, it's better to build something slowly and keep your relationship sound than to try and make it fast and lose the people who matter most along the way. I mean, you can't fix your relationships later, but you can easily tack another year or two onto your side project. So take your time and enjoy the journey. As Gary Vaynerchuk says, you know, be macro patient, micro impatient. Think about the long term, play the long game, be patient about the long game. But when you're working on your project, be impatient, work hard, be focused. But then when you're not working on your project, go back to being patient about the long term plan that you have to make this thing a success. So they say that idle hands do the devil's work. You and I and millions of others around the world have been blessed with something far more valuable than money or status or fame or any of those things. We've been blessed with some additional time. So my advice to you is don't lay idle. Treat this once in a generation event as the opportunity that it is. It really is the new gold rush era. And I shouldn't have the word rush in there. It's not a gold rush. It is a golden era for all of us. This convergence of circumstances has created an incredible opportunity for just about everybody if they're willing to pursue it. And the blessing, of course, is that most people won't pursue it. So there'll always be plenty of room for those who are prepared to put in the work. As one of my great mentors, Michael Yardney, says, spend your time wisely. Anyway, that's it for me for this week. Thanks for hanging out with me again, and I'll see you again real soon.